Amen. Well, if you've got a Bible with you, I'd love if you could turn to it or turn it on. We're reading from Luke chapter 5 and verse 1, which says this, that one day as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, the people were crowding round him and listening to the word of God. He saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon Peter, and asked him to put out a little from the shore. Then he sat down and he taught the people from the boat. And when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon Peter, "Put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch." But Simon Peter answered, "Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. Jesus, what you're asking us to do, it doesn't make any logical sense. But," says Simon Peter, "because you say so, I will." Or, in the Tim Alpha translation, and for the purposes of my message title today, "because you say so, I'm in." Soul Survivor, I wonder if you could do me a favor and say it as loud as you can. Everybody say, "I'm in." I wonder if you, like Simon Peter, have ever been asked to do something that you didn't understand. I wonder if anybody's asked you to do something that you didn't see the sense in. As I mentioned a few moments ago, I've got a little daughter by the name of Aria. She's 2 years old. And Aria, she hates having her teeth cleaned. She absolutely cannot handle it. And so, like, every time when you approach her with the toothbrush, she runs away. She screams, "I have to physically hold her. I have to force the toothbrush into her mouth." And she's going, "I hate it! I hate it!" And so I thought, I've got to try a new approach to this teeth cleaning situation. And so I knelt down in front of her one day, and I very gently tried to explain to her that, "Aria, listen, I know you hate having your teeth cleaned, but it's really important that you clean your teeth, because if you don't, all of your teeth will start to rot and it will be really painful, and Aria, all of your teeth will fall out." And so the next day I approached Aria with the toothbrush, and she ran away from me screaming, "I want all my teeth to fall out!" I wonder if you've ever been asked to do something that you didn't see the sense in. And how many of us know that following Jesus can be an awful lot like that? How many of us know that Jesus will often ask us to do things that we don't understand, that don't seem to make sense, that sometimes feel painful, and often come without any explanation as to why he is asking us to do them? And you know how this feels, because this is exactly what your parents do. Now, I don't know about you, but when I was living at home with my parents, they used to have these mantras that they would say to me on repeat. Things like, "If a job's worth doing, it's worth doing well." Or, "Look after the pennies and the pounds will look after themselves." And they were kind of okay, if a little annoying. But there was one thing that they used to say to me all the time, and I just couldn't handle it. I mean, it really enraged me. It was like red rag to a bull. And this is when they asked me to do something, and I said, "Why?" And they said, "Because I said so." Is there anybody else whose parents say that to them in the room today? I knew there would be. And I couldn't take it. I absolutely couldn't handle it. Because the thing is that whether it's our teachers or our bosses or especially our parents, we are not people who like to do things, who naturally like to do things simply because they said so. We need to know, don't we, that there's a purpose, that there's a reason, that there's a thought through resolution before we obey. And yet, here, in this story, Jesus asks Simon Peter to do something that doesn't make any sense. He offers him no explanation as to why he is asking him to do it. And yet, Simon Peter simply says, "Because you say so, I'm in." And somehow, right at the very beginning of his journey of following Jesus, Simon Peter learns something that often takes you and me years to understand and internalize, that you don't have to understand completely to obey immediately. Simon Peter understands that following Jesus often looks an awful lot like saying, "Jesus, I don't understand it, I don't see it, I don't perceive the purpose in it, but because you say so, I'm in." And you know what? it feels to me like Mike and Ali and Beth and Andy and this incredible Soul Survivor team are modeling this principle perfectly for us right now. Because they have heard God ask them to do something that on the surface at least seems to make very little sense. I mean, why would you stop something like this? It's fun and it's still so fruitful and we love it. And yet, just like Simon Peter, they have had the obedience to say, Jesus, because you say so, I'm in. But I kind of feel like we should be excited because do you know what Jesus does as a result of obedience like that? If you don't, let's read on in the story and we'll find out. We've worked hard all night, Simon Peter said, and we haven't caught anything, but because you say so, I'm in. And when they had done so, here's what happened. They caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came and they filled boats, both boats, so full that they began to sink. And when Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man." For he and all of his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people." Do you see that the result of Simon Peter's obedience was a miraculous catch? And guys, I just can't help but wonder if the reason that God has asked this Soul Survivor team to do something that on the surface appears to make very little sense is because he wants a miraculous catch of people in our nation. And I know that that doesn't seem to make any sense because on the surface, this feels like the end of something. But could it be that just as with Simon Peter, their obedience might be the catalyst for God to do something for you and for us together that we had barely imagined possible? See, I kind of see it a little bit like this. This is a NASA space shuttle. And in order for one of these shuttles to launch into space, it has to break through the atmosphere. And to break through the atmosphere, it requires this humongous fuel tank and these giant side rocket boosters. And without those things, that space shuttle cannot break through the atmosphere. It cannot reach that altitude. It cannot make that journey into orbit. And yet, in order for that very same space shuttle to continue on its journey, it has to let go of the very thing that took it to such an incredible altitude in the first place. And friends, in the same way, I believe that you and I would not be where we are today without the incredible ministry of Soul Survivor. And yet, God in these days is calling us into a new orbit together that we will be able to enter into because they have had the obedience to let go of the very thing that brought us to this place in the first place. Guys, I guess what I'm trying to say to you today is this, that though these Soul Survivor events may be finishing, God has not finished moving through this generation. What I'm wanting you to know today, yeah, you can if you want, is that though these Soul Survivor events may be finishing, I believe it in my gut that God has not finished moving in this nation through this generation. And do you know that the way we best honor the legacy of Soul Survivor is not by giving up and by shrinking back, but by taking hold of the purposes of God for our lives and saying, "Jesus, I don't understand it, but because you say so, I'm in." Help me out, Soul Survivor, and everybody say it nice and loud. Say, "I'm in." I'm in. Say, "I'm in." See, I'm learning that you can't step into your future while you're holding on to your past. I'm beginning to discover that sometimes you have to leave something before you can go somewhere with God. I'm learning that in order to step into your destiny, you often have to leave behind your security. Which brings us nicely onto our next story, also involving Simon Peter, also involving a boat. Goes like this. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat. This is more wobbly than I had anticipated. Quite comfy, though. Well, hello, this could go terribly wrong. And go on ahead of him to the other side. While he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up onto the mountainside by himself to pray. And later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from the land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. By the way, did you notice that it was Jesus that sent them into the storm? Which tells me that just because something feels difficult doesn't mean that it's not from Jesus. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. Well, you would be, wouldn't you? It's a ghost, they said, and they cried out to him in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid. Now, listen to what our friend Simon Peter says. Lord, if it's you, Simon Peter replied, tell me to come to you on the water. Now, why would Simon Peter, or anyone else for that matter, say something as stupid as that? I'll tell you why. It's because Simon Peter remembered his earlier lesson, that though I may not be able to see it, though I can't understand it or perceive it, though I don't know how it will work or what you are up to, if you say it, Jesus, I'm in. And so Jesus says, come. And Peter doesn't just say, I'm in. He gets in. Come, Jesus said. And then, hopefully I don't fall over, Peter, hello, got out of the boat. And he walked on the water and he came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind and he saw the waves, he was afraid and he began to sink. And he cried out in fear, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus reached out his hand and he caught him. You have little faith, he said. Why did you doubt? And then when they climbed back into the boat, the wind died down. Now, I don't know about you, but I've often heard this story told as a story of Peter's failure. You see, he gets out of the boat, he walks towards Jesus, he has his eyes on Jesus, but then he takes his eyes off Jesus, he sees the wind and the waves, and fear creeps in and doubt creeps in, and because he took his eyes off Jesus, he begins to sink. And I guess there's some truth to that lesson, but what we don't often talk about when we talk about this story is what happened in between you of little faith and climbing back into the boat. Because you see, unless you believe that Jesus and Simon Peter had a little swim together, then it occurs to me that Jesus reached out his hand, lifted Simon Peter to his feet, and they walked together, hand in hand, side by side, across the water, while all of the disciples who were still inside the boat watched on in amazement, wishing it was them. And the only disciple who left the storm that day with that story to tell was the one who was willing to step away from what was safe and familiar and into what was scary and uncomfortable. And Peter found out that day that in order to step into your destiny, you have to leave behind your security. Peter followed Jesus into the water and he found out that that's where Jesus is. Jesus is in the stormy waters. Jesus is where the risk is the greatest. And friends, I believe that God has a calling and a mandate and an assignment for this generation. But I want to know, will we have this kind of courage in our day? Will we, like Simon Peter, have the courage to leave behind the things that feel safe and familiar and to step into the stormy waters of following Jesus? Will we have the courage to say, Lord, I don't understand it. I can't perceive it. I don't know how it will work. But because you say so, I'm in. I'm in. If you're with me, Soul Survivor, everybody say, I'm in. I'm in. But what is it that the Lord is calling us to be in for in these days? What are the scary, unfamiliar things he's calling us to step into? Well, I want to share with you three things that the Lord has been speaking to me about as we step into a new season together. And the first thing is that I believe that God is calling us to step into wholeness in a time of brokenness. Wholeness in a time of brokenness. Throw up a hand for me if you've ever broken a bone. Anybody in the room ever broken a bone? Oh, there's loads of us. I three on three occasions have broken a bone.
The most painful of which, though, happened one Saturday morning. And it was before I had kids, because it involved something that I don't get to have now that I have kids, a lie-in. And it was a Saturday morning. Maybe it was 9:30. Maybe it was 10 o'clock in the morning, where by now it kind of feels like lunchtime to me. And I kind of awoke from my Saturday morning lie-in. I was kind of in that groggy state, you know, where you're kind of half asleep and half awake. And my eyes are half open and half closed. And I began to walk towards the bathroom to do my morning wee. And as I was walking towards the bathroom, you know, with my eyes half closed, suddenly I awoke with a jolt, and there is this searing pain that is coursing through my body. It was so bad that instantly I began to sweat. It was so bad that my legs began to give way beneath me. I began to feel lightheaded. And so what I did is I reached out onto the banister in my hallway, and as I reached out to steady myself, I looked down, only to discover that my little toe was not facing in the direction that it should have been. Because you see, what had happened was, as I had awoken and had my eyes half closed, I'd walked past the radiator, kicked the radiator pipe, and I would discover later in accident and emergency that I snapped the bone of my little toe all the way through. All the way through. Anyway, back to the story. So I'm there, and I'm holding on to the banister, and being a strong Christian young man, I called the name of the one who I know will always be there for me in my time of need. I called out in that moment to the one who I know will never leave me, will never forsake me. And I said, Jen! That's my wife's name, by the way, not a false idol, just in case you were worried. I said, Jen, I've broken my toe. Do you know what Jen did? My loving, my caring wife, who's always there for me, always ready to come to my aid. Do you know what she did? She laughed. She laughed. When eventually she managed to overcome the hilarity of the situation, she did help me down the stairs, and she put me into the car, and she helped me off to accident and emergency. And in that moment, my friends, I did something that I believe any self-respecting male would do when they see something gross and own a camera phone. Yes, I took a photograph. And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, rejoice and be glad, for his blessings are new every morning. I have that photograph to show you. Would you like to see it? Here it is. Now, calm down. Now, Soswell, listen to me. I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Tim, your toes are gross upon gross, and I cannot even tell which one is broken. But I have two things to say to you. Number one is this: God made my toes, and he saw that they were good. And number two, is if you were to look at my right little toe and compare it to my left little toe, you will see that my left little toe is clearly not facing in the right direction. Why don't we take that photo away now, because people are crying? Okay. Why am I sharing this story with you? Well, if I'm really honest, mostly because I thought it would be funny to creep you out with a picture of my disgusting toes. But also, because what I found at that time was that though my little toe is one of the smallest bones in the whole of my body, when it was broken, it made everything harder. And all of the usual simple tasks of the day became very, very difficult to fulfill. Because this one thing was broken, my whole life was incapacitated. And friends, I believe that God is calling us in these days to wholeness in a time of brokenness. I believe that he's calling us to joy in a time of depression. I believe he's calling us to peace in a time of anxiety. Because for many of you, your anxiety is for you what my little toe was for me then. It's not particularly visible, but it impacts everything that you do. And please, friends, don't get me wrong. I know that this is a battle. And I know that if depression or anxiety or any of that stuff is a challenge for you, I want to be really clear that God could not love you anymore exactly the way you are right now. But I also do not believe that this is the end of God's purposes for you. Because you see, if we don't have a view of God's renewal and restoration in our lives, if we conclude that this is us and just will be us forever, then what happens is my anxiety in my mind starts to become someone that I am rather than something that I have. And so my brokenness becomes my identity. But I just needed to tell you this morning that anxiety might be something that you have, but it is not who you are. It is not who you are. And I needed you to know that no matter how dark it feels right now, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And you know what? Sometimes going through that tunnel will mean seeing a GP. Sometimes going through that tunnel will mean medication or counseling. And guys, that stuff is good. But the light at the end of the tunnel is none of those things. Because the light at the end of the tunnel is Jesus. And to get through this, you must hold on to Jesus. And to get through this, you must keep your eyes on Jesus. And to get through this, you must step away from the things that feel familiar and into something that feels scary. And take Jesus by his hand as he leads you through that storm. I believe it. God is calling us, me, you, this generation, to wholeness in a time of brokenness, to joy in a time of depression, to peace in a time of anxiety. Because could you just imagine what would happen for our friends to look at us in a world that is ridden with anxiety and to wonder, how is it that you have so much peace? I believe that God is calling us to wholeness in a time of brokenness. So if you're up for that, why don't you say it nice and loud? Say it with me. Say, I'm in. He's calling us to wholeness in a time of brokenness. I believe he's also calling us to family in a time of division. I've got a little boy. I mentioned it earlier. And a couple of years ago, I was driving in my car. And I was in the driver's seat. And my wife, she was in the passenger seat. And Tobiah, who was three at the time, he was sitting in the back seat. And I pulled into a parking space. And being the kind and gentle and loving husband that I am, I leaned over to my wife. I gave her a little kiss on the head like that. And as I did that, I heard from the back seat, ooh. And so I turned round and Tobiah goes, are you in love? And I said, yes, Tobiah, mummy and daddy are in love. Tobiah goes, I did not know that. Here's the thing. He didn't know it, but eventually he saw it because the evidence of it was visible in the way that we treated each other. And guys, I wanted to tell you that if we really loved one another in the way that Jesus loved us, the world would notice. You know, the commission, the mandate that Jesus gave to his disciples, the thing that he said would mark us out as his followers. This is what he said. He said, by this will people know that you're my disciples. No, not by what you believe, not by the fact that you go to church or see you or to Soul Survivor in the summer. Not by your ethics or your morals. They're not the things that will mark you out. Jesus said, by this will people know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. And guys, you don't need me to tell you. In a world that is seemingly more divided and entrenched in our opinions than ever, just how precious and countercultural that is. Because though you and I, we may not be able to, you know, march into parliament and give a speech that demands for unity. Do you know what we can do is we can model something different. We can show our world what it looks like to be family in a time of division. Guys, could you imagine what would happen in a world where we are known by the things that divide us? What it would look like for our friends, for the world to look at us and wonder, how can they be so diverse and yet so united? To look at us and wonder, how can they be so different and yet have so much love? I believe that God is calling us to be a beautifully diverse yet unusually united family in a time of division. So guys, if you're up for that, let's say it together. Let's say it like we're a family. Everybody say, I'm in. He's calling us to wholeness in a time of brokenness, family in a time of division, and finally, I believe God in these days is calling you and me to devotion in a time of distraction. Throw up a hand if there's any football fans in the house. Yeah, we've got some football fans. Any Portsmouth FC fans? No, I didn't think so. Well, if you are a football fan, then wait until I introduce you to this guy, John Anthony Westwood, a super fan. This guy, John Anthony Westwood, he has 60 Portsmouth Football Club tattoos. He has the initials PFC engraved on his teeth. And he has changed his name legally by deed poll to John Anthony Portsmouth Football Club Westwood. That's devotion. Have we got any believers in the house? If you don't know what a believer is, just turn to the person next to you and say, what do you mean? there's not many believers. I thought there were going to be more believers, but if there's not very many believers in the house, well, you should meet Gabrielle Newton. Gabrielle Newton, she's practically dying of Bieber fever. She does, in fact, have 5 Justin Bieber tattoos. And once again, there's a common theme. She has changed her name in order to pretend that she's married to Justin, to Gabrielle Newton Bieber. Too late now to say sorry, I suppose. Anyway, friends, can I ask you, what are you going to devote your life to? Because you have one life and you will devote it to something. It may not be to a football team or to Justin Bieber, but it might be to yourself or to a relationship or to popularity or to fame, to money. You know that they used to say that money, sex, and power were the primary things that the enemy would use to subvert God's purposes in our lives and knock us off course. But I can't help but wonder if the enemy has developed a new strategy in our day, not so much to lead us into some kind of epic moral crash, but rather to keep us distracted so that we cannot be devoted. See, we can't read our Bibles anymore because we open up the Bible app on our phones and then we get distracted by that message notification that comes in. We struggle to pray because our brains have developed 8-second filters and we just can't deal with the waiting. And I don't know if you've ever multiplied your daily screen time by 365 to see how much of the year you spend on your phone, but trust me, it's frightening. And in all of this, I can't help but wonder if the greatest trick of the devil today is not to lead us into some kind of evil, but simply to have us wasting time. Because you see, if we are distracted, then we cannot be devoted. And if we are not devoted, then we cannot step out of that boat and into God's future purposes for our lives. But friends, I believe that God is calling you and me to be different to the people around us. I believe he's calling us to devotion in a time of distraction. I believe that he's calling us to give our whole selves to him, to order our whole lives around him. Could you imagine what would happen if we all did that? Could you imagine what would happen through an army of fully devoted Jesus followers? An author I love, Brennan Manning, he paints a better picture than I could of what might happen. He says this: if indeed we lived a life of imitation of his, our witness would be irresistible. The walls of indifference to Jesus Christ would crumble. A handful of us could be ignored by society, but hundreds, thousands, millions of such servants would overwhelm the world. Christians filled with the authenticity, commitment, and generosity of Jesus would be the most spectacular sign in the history of the human race. The call of Jesus is revolutionary. If we implemented it, we would change the world in a few months. What are we going to dedicate our lives to? Will we devote ourselves fully to Jesus? Will we have the courage to say, Jesus, whatever it takes, whatever it looks like, I'm in? Because the Bible says that the eyes of the Lord, they range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. And my prayer is that as God looks and he searches, he will find us. And he will say, here is a generation who are not easily distracted or turned away. Here is a generation who know how to turn off their phones and pick up their Bibles because their hearts are fully devoted to me. I believe God is calling us to devotion in a time of distraction. So if you're up for that, say it like you're devoted. Say, I'm in. I want to finish today by sharing with you a story about my friend Sophie. Sophie, she began coming to my youth group in my hometown a couple of years ago now. When she began to come, she wasn't a Christian. She had no faith background. She didn't have any interest in faith, really. But in May last year, Sophie made the best decision that she'll ever make, and she gave her life to Jesus. Come on. Yeah. 2 months later, she was walking through the city of Worcester, and she walked past a homeless man. And rather than doing what, to my shame, I too often do, which is to put my head down and power on past, she decided to stop. She turned over the straw in her McDonald's milkshake, and she sat with him, and she listened to his story. She discovered that his name was Andy. She heard about why he was on the streets, how he had ended up there, and how desperate he was to get back into work and up on his feet again. So, after sharing a couple of verses from the Bible that she'd recently been given and telling Andy that God would love him no matter what, Sophie asked if she might be able to do something about it. So she took this photograph and she posted it to her Facebook profile along with Andy's story, asking if there was anyone out there who could help Andy to get a job. This post was received 833 likes, 538 shares, and 181 comments. And by the way, not all of those comments were positive. And then, just 1 week later, Sophie posted this. Guess who? Andy has been given a job and is working tremendously hard. All of the negative comments were 100% worth it. It just goes to show he isn't as bad as people were making out. God has a plan for you, Andy, and I'm so proud of you. That's cool, isn't it? And here's the thing. That's just one story of one person who said to God, whatever it looks like for me today, Jesus, I'm in. And you know what Sophie's story that day taught me? It taught me this, that you can't change the world for everyone, but you can change someone's world. And if we all change the world for someone, then together we change the world for everyone. And my friends, this is why I gave up on the idea of being a history maker a long time ago, because I realized that that dream was too small. Because you see, I found out that battles are not won by heroes, but by armies. Not by isolated individuals, but by fully devoted communities. So I no longer dream of making history. I dream of a family in unity who will change the world as a community. I dream of a generation rising up who hates to be lukewarm. I dream of a generation of warriors who will fight on their knees. I dream of a generation of people who've got rips in their jeans, but not because they bought them that way from Topshop, but because they were worn out from being on their faces through prayer. Oh, I dream of a generation who will be done with compromising, who are sick of compromising, who are so filled with a contagious passion and purpose that the people around them can't help but catch it from them. See, I don't dream about what God could do through me. I dream about what God could do through us. I believe that the limits of our present circumstances are not the limits of our future possibilities. I believe that as much as this moment represents an ending, it also represents a beginning. I believe in the very depths of my gut that God has not finished moving in our nation. That God has not finished moving through this generation. And so this message, as I finish, is a call for you and a call for me to say to Jesus today, whatever it takes, because you say so, I'm in. Even though I don't know how it's going to work out, I'm in. Even though it feels scary to me today, I'm in. Even though it feels a little bit uncomfortable and unfamiliar, I'm in. Jesus, whatever it looks like, whatever it takes, whatever you want to do, I'm in. If you're in with me, Soul Survivor, one last time, say it loud. Say, I'm in. So my question for you today is simply this. Are you in?